Hi, my name is Robin Berry, and you might know me from Palantir.net and Workbench. This is episode 43 of the Modules Unraveled podcast.
Welcome to the Modules Unraveled podcast, where the Drupal community speaks. And now your host, he loves mango anything, Brian Lewis.
Welcome to the Modules Unraveled podcast. My name is Brian Lewis, and today I'm talking with Robin Berry. Robin is a senior engineer and team lead at Palantir. She has experience building Drupal-based websites for large organizations. Recent projects include Barnard College and the Field Museum of Natural History. And Robin, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks. I'm happy to be here. And, you know, I'm really excited that you do these podcasts and the videos as well. It's great to have a resource like you out there, you know, helping to spread the word and teach people what you know. It's really a wonderful thing. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how much you know about me, but I learned everything. I'm completely self-taught, and most of it was from videos like the Mustard Seed Podcast and things like that. And so I thought if I can figure something out, why not share it with somebody else so they can not have to go through all the trouble of figuring it out. So
that's right. It's the Drupal way.
Yeah. Cool. Do you want to start out by telling us a little bit about you and where you're from?
Sure. So I live in Chicago, Illinois, and I've been working with Palantir for, I'm starting my third year with them now. And I started using Drupal when 4.7 was the commonly used version. Mm-hmm. honestly, I have to thank Gregory Heller, who helped nudge me, poked me, prodded me to try Drupal, because as a PHP developer, I had been highly unsatisfied with most content management systems. Mm. I always found some sort of restriction somewhere, and I gave up on them over and over. And I was like, oh my God, not another content management system. So I went to one of the first Drupal camps. It was in Seattle, and it was a wonderful experience because everyone was so excited. Not everyone knew what they were doing, but you know, if they figured something out, they were showing people how to do it. And I loved the community right away. And so I wanted to be a part of that. And so I took about, I don't know, a good 6 months of really investigating Drupal as a choice as a developer, right? Like, is this something I can use when I'm working with clients? Something I can extend, something that they can grow with, that sort of thing. And, you know, and of course I kept trying to find issues with it, you know, like, oh, it's not going to be able to be this flexible, or it's not going to, you know, handle translation, or, you know, think of some of those things. And, of course, Drupal almost always proved me wrong, and someone already built a module that did what I needed, right?
Right.
You know, so I was like, okay, this is good, you know, I like this, so. So that's how I got started. I just experimented with it, and I love the community, and I encourage everyone to join their local user group if you're confused and unsure about what you're doing. You know, we're all confused, but in the most wonderful way. So, you know, you have to get in there and try things and ask other people how they do it so you can learn and grow with Drupal.
Right. Cool. Okay, what's a recent project that you've been working on?
So recently I worked with the University of Michigan Medical School, which helped fund some of the latest work we have in Workbench moderation. So that was a really exciting challenge for me, kind of coming in as a tech lead from the Workbench point of view, but I was doing the engineering work on the medical school website. And so, you know, this was a time where Colleen Carroll at Palantir and I took some time to kind of identify what we really needed in Workbench moderation in the 2x version, you know, what did 1x not solve, and pull together basically a feature list, turning that into a set of requirements, estimating how much time it would take, and working with the client to see if, you know, that would work for what they needed as well. So It was interesting to come at it from two different approaches, one from what does the client need, and also two, what do we identify as users of our own module, what's missing, you know, what problems can we solve with a 2x version. So that's really some of the big work I've done this year. And I've also been, you know, some of you may have seen my presentations at the last couple of DrupalCons, and we introduced Workbench at DrupalCon Chicago, which is still I just watched the screencast again, and it's a valid presentation to watch. It really covers what our ideas were when we first built Workbench and what our ideals are now. You know, really Workbench helping to solve content editors' needs, you know, so beyond just building the site, but how do you maintain your content after that? So
cool.
That's what I've been working on.
Sounds good. Okay, I'm going to take a quick second to ask anybody who's watching. I know we've got a few viewers at least right now. Send out a tweet real quick with the hashtag MUP043. Oh, and watch this. I got a fancy lower third to throw on.
Oh, boom. Cool. Oh, nice. Yeah. Nice. Well done.
I just found that out like 5 seconds ago before we started. So
yeah, lower third's pretty cool.
Yeah. So
Google Plus, it'll distract you forever.
I know. Man, before I started doing these live, I got on with my dad to try it out. And we ended up playing, there's a game on here, Warlight. It's basically Risk. But
We
played that like an entire game, and it was supposed to be like a 5 second, let's test to see if it works. And we ended up playing an entire game of Risk. And
very yeah. Nice.
Anyways. Okay. So yeah, go ahead and tweet. Let us know if you're out there listening. And if you have any questions throughout the show, use that same hashtag MUP043 and we'll answer some questions at the end of the show. All right, let's jump right in. The Workbench suite is actually comprised of a few modules. You got Workbench, Workbench Access, Workbench Moderation, and then Workbench Media. Let's start at the top with the just plain old Workbench module.
Right.
And first of all, I wanted to kind of give my thumbs up to the module because I started using it recently. I haven't actually used it on a site yet, simply because I hadn't taken the time to learn it. But you know, they say the best way to learn something is to teach it. So I'm actually in the process of putting together a video series for it so that I can learn it and then, you know, share that knowledge with other people who want to know.
Great.
So that should be coming out later this month. I'm really excited. But anyways, to the module, the project page says, quote, Workbench provides overall improvements for managing content that Drupal does not provide out of the box. So can you elaborate a little bit on what that means?
I can. So, you know, our idea with Workbench is to try and unify some of the daily tasks editors and content contributors are trying to manage. And really, we wanted to try and ease the process of creating and managing content. And Workbench itself, that main module, provides the dashboard, right? So it's okay. The My Workbench link that you see up in the toolbar and basically kind of giving some of the default views that we have in there. And it just, you know, our idea was to try and, I think initially, just simplify things for people who are only managing content. They're not changing views, you know, they're not creating content types, you know,
right.
They're the people that are creating the news items each day and, you know, uploading videos for people to watch. And we wanted to simplify that process and try and pull it together, right? So Drupal makes it possible to do lots of things, but many times the user interface doesn't come together the way we'd like it to. So Workbench is trying to solve that issue of unifying those processes.
Okay. So I guess kind of from what I understand is it's almost like a Workbench API module where it doesn't do a whole lot on its own. It provides that My Workbench area, like you were saying, but most of the functionality from the Workbench suite comes from the other three modules. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah. So, right. And they feed into it. You know, the Workbench Moderation adds its own tabs to the dashboard, that sort of thing. And you can do the same too. You know, in most cases, when we're implementing Workbench for a client, we end up customizing the views that are in there, giving them whatever, you know, columns of data they would prefer to see, or even additional views that, you know, that they need just for whatever particular content they're managing. So, I would expect people to do the same. You know, out of the box, it's great as is. But if you're sitting there going, I really want to see some other dates on, you know, when I'm looking at this list of content, you should just go in and edit that view and go for it. You know, that's what we do.
Okay, so that's all using the views module. It's not
that's right.
Writing code. Somebody can just go in and start tweaking that.
Exactly, and that's been our goal all along, that we're using what Drupal already provides, and again, just pulling it together into a more unified user interface.
Cool, excellent. All right, let's move on to Workbench Access. So now this one actually provides some access controls over who can create and edit content on the site. I guess first let's ask, what are the different ways that you can decide who has those access permissions?
Right. So Workbench Access provides integration with menus and taxonomy out of the box. And what makes Workbench Access different from other access control modules and from Core's roles and permissions is that it's providing the hierarchy, right? So for instance, if you created a taxonomy with a hierarchy in it, you can apply access control with that same hierarchy. So let me give you an example. Let's say you have people who manage content by geography, like by a region. So you might say, I'm in charge of Southeast United States content, right? And then, but another person, Joe, he's managing the content just for what's coming out of the state of Georgia. So you can create that hierarchy of, you know, kind of Southeast states and then Georgia within it, and say, you know, Robin can access and edit any content in any state, but Joe can only access the content and edit it that's in Georgia. So that's the big issue, is that it's trying to solve that idea of, instead of having just a direct one-to-one relationship, kind of allowing for the hierarchy that we naturally think of in our heads when we come up with ideas around menus and taxonomy. So that's one big thing. And then I think the other thing is, the other difficulty I think people have with Workbench Access is thinking that it's going to control what you see, and it doesn't do that. So
okay.
It could, but right now Workbench Access is only about access control. So it doesn't mean that when I'm on the dashboard in Workbench, I would only see the content in the Southeast United States, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
I still see all of the content and what people are working on. And I know I hear people asking for that kind of restriction in what they see, but I don't. It's really difficult for me to say who should draw that line, and I'm not sure that Workbench or Workbench Access should. That might be a customization you make. And the reason why is because it's hard for me to identify what the rules will always be.
Right.
So, and in some cases, people think they want to restrict what they see, and then it turns out they actually didn't. So they actually do need to see a list of everything, and then they just need like the ability to filter or something like that. And again, that might be just adding an exposed views filter of your taxonomy or something like that. So it can be pretty straightforward.
Okay. Cool. And just to give another example, I guess, for the way that this could work, I often go back to like using building a school website, because that's kind of where I got my start recently. And so one place that I could see that this could have been a really good module to use on that site is, say, the principal of a school can have access to edit any content on their site, whereas classroom teachers can only edit content that's, you know, in their class, and then students can only, say, comment on something that it's in a class that they're a member of.
Right.
Yeah, cool. I might have to talk to the guy who's taken over that and say, hey, you need to start using this.
Yeah, it can work out really well in that kind of scenario when you need that sort of, you know, certain people can access certain things, but not everything.
Right. So. Excellent. So you mentioned taxonomy and menus, And taxonomy is the one that seemed to make the most sense and easiest to use. I'm personally having a little trouble wrapping my brain around how the menus would work. Like what?
So imagine your menus. It kind of depends on your IA, but let's say we had a website that was grouped into sections. So you might have areas of study, like science, languages, things like that, you know, history. Okay, let's say we have those three. And you actually set up a menu structure that follows that kind of grouping of content. And the content always, you know, so you could set up those three groups and say, you know, Robin only controls science content. And it's based on, is this node, let's say, you know, a node is in that science part of the menu, right? Mm. So if you're creating, again, it's got to be a hierarchy. So I might have three like main parent menu items of, you know, science and history and so on. You know, accessing the content is based on the relationship of that node to that menu, essentially, as compared to applying a taxonomy term, right? So in this case, you're applying the menu.
So with a taxonomy, there's actually a field that then gets added to that content type, and you have to select which taxonomy term this is under. Is that same thing there for if you're using menus?
Well, I think you end up using the menu navigation, the menu form that's already in the node edit form, right? So when you go down and you say add this to a menu, that's how you would create that connection.
Okay. And then
so it's relying on Core's ability to set, oh, it's time for a break. Sorry about that. So it's relying on Core's management of menus and menu items and things like that.
Okay, so does it actually put it in the visible menu, or would it just, or could this be like a menu that's not hit or not shown, or
I think that you would only want to use this when you are actually showing the menu. Okay. That's where it's going to make the most sense. So I think if you know that you have access control that is managed around your sitemap, that might be a good way to look at it.
Okay.
It's like, oh yeah, okay, I only manage the about us section and someone else manages the portfolio.
Okay.
You want to think about it in those terms, right? So it's possible that you could do this without actually displaying the menu, but that doesn't make much sense to me as I'm thinking about it right now.
Yeah, because then you would just want to use taxonomy.
Yeah, why not?
Okay. I had another question about functionality that's not there right now. Is it possible or are there plans to include like organic groups hierarchies as an option?
I think organic groups already does that. I'm not sure that you would, why not just use organic groups? I'm not sure that there needs to be integration is I guess what I'm getting at.
Here's where I'm coming from. Maybe this will help.
Okay.
On the site that I built, there are, you know, a class or like a school is a group, and then the teachers can create classrooms, and they can have, you know, multiple subgroups for the kids. Right now, you can set permissions per group, but like the principal who's in the school group doesn't necessarily have control over what's in each classroom or each subgroup. And same thing if a teacher is just the classroom, but the kids are in, you know, they don't have the hierarchical, I guess, access controls.
Yeah, because I guess organic groups doesn't do that, right?
Yeah.
I think that, you know, one of the things that's nice about Workbench Access is that it is also built with an API, so it's possible that we could build in some hierarchy with the organic groups. I think you and I would want to talk to Ken Rickard about that,
okay,
since he's the main maintainer, and he also works at Palantir, so we can ask him about that. But it may be possible. I'm kind of hesitating a little bit because menus and taxonomy come with a concept of hierarchy, and if organic groups doesn't, I'm not sure how we manage that in Workbench Access.
Okay.
So I'm not going to say it's impossible. I'm just going to say it's not very clear to me right now how we do that.
Sure. That's fair. Okay. Okay. Enough about workbench access. Let's go on to workbench moderation. Now, this is kind of where my experience stops with the suite so far, because I haven't gotten into moderation or media.
Okay.
So explain to me, what exactly does workbench moderation do?
Right. So workbench moderation provides editorial workflow and with sane defaults. That's how we're looking at it, right? So the workflow module is out there, and it can allow you to create incredibly complex workflows. And we tried to reduce the user story to imagine what do we need as people who are managing content, and have workbench moderation give us some pretty good defaults out of the box, with the ability to tweak it as you see fit. So workbench moderation, the 1x version, is a solid way of managing content when you have concepts of, I need to put something into draft mode before I make it public. Right? This is a common scenario we see, that people want to change content, but they don't actually want to publish that change right away. I don't know. I haven't worked with any clients that didn't want draft. They all want it. And they want to keep what's already published, right? So that's, draft is the idea of forward revisioning, basically allowing me to create a new revision that isn't available to the public, that I can work on it until it's ready. That's really one of the wonderful things about using any kind of moderation or workflow, is just that ability to kind of contain your content before you publish it.
Right.
And in most cases, people would want to use workbench moderation when you have lots of editors, lots of content contributors, and people that need to go, you know, that can add lots of content but don't necessarily have the right to publish that content. Hmm. So in general, that's often how I see it implemented. It's people want the ability for lots of folks to enter content, but there are one or two gatekeepers who manage what actually goes out the door.
Hmm.
So your most basic implementation is, I need draft. and then the step up from there is, I need an approval system before content is released.
Hmm. Okay, so yeah, this is the one that actually lets you say, going back to the school analogy, teachers can add events to the calendar, but they can only add it as a draft stage or needs review stage, for example.
Right.
And then like the secretary could approve the calendar events from all the teachers, and then after the secretary's approved it, that's when it's actually live on the calendar.
That's right. So it actually changes that core checkbox from unpublished to published, right? It actually checks the box. So that's what's happening. And so workbench moderation really takes over that published checkbox that we're all used to seeing when we edit, right? You just kind of think of it in terms of, that goes away, and now I manage the state of my content through workbench moderation, and whether it's in draft, needs review, or published.
So does it actually remove it?
Yes.
All right.
We actually use a form alter and make it go away.
Cool. Good. That's good, because that means nobody's going to use that instead on accident. So, cool.
Right. So we have seen, what's interesting is that other workflow modules, and I'm actually thinking of State Machine here, they leave that checkbox available, and then they determine on, then it allows you to control whether or not you see it.
Hmm.
But again, I think that's more of a matter of approach to how you build a module, right? So in our case, we're trying to kind of tone things down, make it easy for you to kind of just get out there and do what you need to do.
Mm-hmm.
And State Machine is solving the larger issue of and the more abstract issue of, what is a state machine and how do I move something from one state to the other? So, so they make fewer decisions for you. So,
right. Okay. So then can you give us some examples of different states that you would add, or that you add in most of the sites that you build with this?
To be honest, I almost always end up using the three that come with it.
Okay.
It's rare that we need to do something like an additional approval. But there are times when people want that extra state. And what we found was that state is actually something that needs to be somewhat separated from what are the steps that I need to take to move this content from draft to published. So one of the things that's really exciting for me is that we've been working on a 2x branch of Workbench moderation, and we basically refactored quite a bit of the code, and we're using CTools now as a way to control the configuration of the workflow. And what this is giving us, among some of our other changes, is the ability to kind of manage things in a different way. So, you know, people might have an idea of saying, I need draft, needs review, published, and maybe an archive. Archive might be a common one. So it's no longer published, but we don't want it to go away. We don't want to delete it. So archived is one of the states that people might use. But the possibilities really open up once we get 2x a little bit more stable, which is something we're going to be working on in the next month. So I'm really excited about that.
Cool. I'm going to ask you about that in just a minute, but we're going to keep going for now.
I know. I was like, I shouldn't jump ahead.
Okay. So my next question about this specifically was, can it be integrated with like the scheduler module so that the next version or the draft can be scheduled to publish on a specific date?
I believe it does integrate with scheduler. I haven't actually done that myself personally, so. Okay. but I believe that will work. In fact, I feel like Steve Persh may have made some changes to make that possible. Hmm. So Steve Persh being one of the other maintainers of all the Workbench modules, but in particular, he and I have been doing a lot of work on moderation.
Okay, cool. I was just thinking that would be useful for like if, well, now I can't think of an example, but.
Well, it is useful because what ends up happening is people have, they have an idea of news they want to post, but they're kind of waiting for a particular date to pass before they actually post that news. So like a holiday is coming up, they don't want to post this news item until that holiday day actually happens, mm-hmm. right? So that would be a typical scenario where people are, it's like, I want to get this written way beforehand, proofread, I get all my images and my videos in place, and then publish it on this date.
Yeah. I guess I was trying to figure out how that would work with the different states. Like if you, this is probably a stupid example, but I'm going to go for it anyways.
Go for it.
Let's say like an online retailer had a site and they had they wanted to publish an advertisement that said, Cyber Monday sale is coming, this weekend, stay tuned. And then they want to edit that and then put in like an actual coupon code or something like that, but that won't actually be published until the Monday comes around. That would be a scenario where they might use the two together. All right, let's move on to our last one, which is Workbench Media. Now, I did see that you had Workbench files before, and that's been depreciated in for Workbench Media now. So
So initially we created Workbench Media to only manage changes that we were making that affected the media module. And as it turned out, it became worth our while to just kind of merge files, which is basically managing that view of seeing what files have been uploaded to your site in the dashboard, mm-hmm. And merge that in with our media stuff, because it was becoming confusing and we're like, this is too much. So we got rid of files for just media.
Okay, so I guess then what does the Workbench Media module do now?
So it really provides some light integration with the media module. The most important from my point of view is that when you click on the Create Content tab, you can add media just like you could add another piece of content, like some other content type. And I really like having those things together because A user doesn't usually think of a video any differently from a blog post. You know, it's like it's all content, right? Mm-hmm. So why do I have to go somewhere far away for adding some media items? So we did that. We actually, I think we have some ideas of where we'd really like to see media go, and it's starting to tie in a little bit. It would be tied in probably a little bit more with what Spark is doing, Spark being the distribution that Acquia has been working on. Mm-hmm. That's working on the authoring experience. So unlike Workbench Access or Workbench Moderation, they're really focused on I am editing this thing. How is that experience? You know, how can we improve that experience? So I'm really excited to see what they're doing there, and I think we'll be able to integrate with what they've done along with, you know, the functionality that Workbench provides. So for media, our ultimate is that when you're editing a node and you need to add in some image or audio or video, that you can basically pull up a library and drag and drop. I don't know why we can't have that.
Yeah, definitely.
We really want that to happen, and I think it's not even that hard to do, technically speaking. It's a matter of finding the time. So I'm not sure who's going to get to it first, Spark or Workbench, or someone else, if that someone else might already be working on this concept. And if they are, they should talk to me, because I want to know about it. So that, you know, we have some ideas around that where it's still easy to find, you know, our minimum is when I'm in my Workbench dashboard, I can find files that have been uploaded and see what nodes they're attached to. Mm-hmm. Because at a minimum, that is very difficult to do in Drupal. So that was our minimum need, and we've met that one. But I wanted to do so much more. I want media to feel far more integrated than it does. So it'll be interesting for me to see if these changes that we're interested in making actually happen in Workbench Media. Do they go into the media module? Are they in Spark? I'm not sure. Hmm. So, you know, from my point of view as a technical lead on Workbench is that we don't need to own it. You know, if another module does it, fabulous. You know, code for me to write and maintain. But sometimes we find it's good if we go ahead and make the initial push in Workbench and say, here's how we think it should work, and let the community react to that. Mm. So we end up doing both things. You know, it's kind of take advantage of what we know already exists in Drupal. And at the same time, when we see that there's a gap out there, we'll push and make something happen and say, here's what we think is a reasonable approach, and then find out if, you know, some of what we've done goes into core, does it go into another module? And some of that has already started to happen. So, you know, a lot of our work, if it ends up as changes in core, I'm highly satisfied. You know, it's like, that's what I want to see. You know, if Workbench could go away because, you know, everything's handled by Drupal some other way, super. You know? So we have more ideas for media, and I think once we get Workbench Moderation, the 2x branch stable, I think we're going to turn to media next and start digging into that and make it everything we ever wanted it to be.
All right. Okay, so about the module, what does it do that the media module doesn't do by itself?
They're really just two things. So one is that the one I mentioned before, so it adds a link on the Create Content tab, so you could upload media separately from doing that within the node edit form. And what that does is it creates a small framework so that the media edit forms can work outside of the node editing process. Right now they're kind of expected to happen in there. Or from admin content, right? Like if you go into admin content, there's that media. You can do it that way. But again, we were trying to find a way to manage media in one location with other content. So it provides a little bit of a wrapper around the media edit forms.
Okay.
But that's about it. That and the file list.
What's the file list?
That's on your My Workbench dashboard, there's a files tab there.
Okay, gotcha. So, haven't gotten that far yet.
Okay.
I'll look forward
when
to
you
that.
Turn that on, you'll see it, and you'll be able to see all the files you've uploaded and what nodes they're associated with, if anything.
Cool. Excellent.
That's good.
Okay, so I guess maybe that's the answer to my next question, but it was, what does it do to the way that media is viewed on the site?
It doesn't, right? So it's not managing whether, you know, what kind of video player might be available. You know, it doesn't manage how it displays inside, you know, if you embedded it in a node or, you know, in a body field or anything like that. So it really is just a matter of trying to simplify the interface for people who need to upload and manage media items.
Okay. Something else that just came to mind, does this also help or affect the way that you remove media from the site?
No, it doesn't really interact with that that functionality. So, although I will say we almost always use file lock module on our sites. So basically what that means is that if you deleted a node and there was a file associated with it, that file is not deleted if it just because you've deleted the node. And we found this incredibly useful for pretty much every project. In most cases, an editor who is deleting a blog post doesn't expect the video that right. they uploaded to disappear as well. They're probably going to reuse that video somewhere else.
Yeah, that makes sense. Especially if it's, I'm still thinking about the school stuff, if they've uploaded a PDF on an article, but then linked to it on another site, you know, with just a text link that says, click here to view the PDF or whatever, and then they delete
right.
the original one, that link's not going to work. But
right. Okay. So it's really helpful for that. And really that files tab in the dashboard is so helpful to find out if three people uploaded the same file three times. So you can start to track that and say, you know, let's simplify this because this is a legal document and we can only have one copy of it
right.
out there. So again, Workbench is there to try and help you get a handle on the files that are used on the site.
So if that scenario happens and you've got three of the same copy, can you go in and basically replace the two that you don't want with the one that you do want?
Well, you can, but you won't do that with Workbench.
Okay. Okay, you just have to go in and edit the node.
You go in and edit those.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. I didn't know if it was
I'd love to tell you could do that all from the Workbench user interface, but that's an excellent feature request.
But it's at least a good way to see that that's happened and that you need to go take care of it.
Exactly.
So you'll have multiple stuff.
Okay. Right.
Cool. Okay, so then does this control access to media assets? For example, does it add like a My Media and All Media tab, or is that something that's just done with media? Or?
Oh, that would just be done with media. So yeah, again, we haven't gone nearly as far as I wish we could have with Workbench Media.
Okay.
But that's not a bad idea that we would do something like that.
Cool. Another feature request.
right.
Okay. So throughout this interview, you've been mentioning a 2.x version, of some of the modules, and is that going to apply to all of them? Are you working on 2.x for all of them?
We're not, unlike our 1.0 release where we released everything at the same time with 1.0, we are not going to follow that process with our 2x versions. And so what that means is that they'll all still work together just fine. Like there's no problem, you know,
okay.
to upgrade to, for instance, we're definitely going to release Workbench Access. It's pretty much ready for a 2.0 release. It'll work perfectly well with all the 1x versions,
okay.
right? So that'll be fine. And so we make sure that's true across the board. So and so then the other module is Workbench Moderation, which is again had some significant changes, and something that I think Steve Persh and I are really excited about. So can I jump into that now?
Okay. Sure. Go ahead.
Talk about that for a little bit, because so what we learned when we released the 1x version of Workbench Moderation is that people had a lot of ideas of how they wanted to use moderation, and that what we had currently built was too limited, that it couldn't possibly handle all the fabulous ideas that people had. And we didn't like that. So we started looking around to see what other modules were doing and seeing if we could take advantage, quite honestly, of those modules and help workbench moderation become a better module.
Right.
And so what we discovered is that State Machine is a wonderful module that really solidifies a state machine. So basically managing something and saying it's, you know, first it's in this state, now it's gone to another state, and managing that transition. And it was, as we looked at it, it seemed to be far more flexible than what we already had as a state machine inside Workbench Moderation. And so we said, you know, I think it's worthwhile that we look at this some more. And we ended up talking to the maintainers of State Machine. I'm forgetting the other module. It was one that Earl Miles worked on. It was for scheduling content publication, though. And so we kind of looked at all three, kind of what does Workbench Moderation do? What does State Machine do? You know, what are these modules doing, and how can we make something, you know, really solid out of this? So we ended up gutting Workbench Moderation, and it now has a dependency in 2x. It'll depend on State Machine. And this shouldn't scare anyone. it's a wonderful thing. And the other thing that we did was we changed the user interface to use cTools. So one, we get the ability to export our configurations, and it's moving us one step closer to basically being able to clone configurations and reuse them more easily. And so that those are, you know, some of the changes that have occurred in the Workbench Moderation 2x version. On top of all that, we changed State Machine, which is now in a 3x branch, allowed it to work with all types of entities. And we added a new entity, which is like a State Machine history entity. And basically what this does is it allows us, once you have an entity, you can do things like add fields to it. So all of a sudden, the idea of keeping a record of every time you change a piece of content, you could add a checkbox that says, I approve this, right? So you can do things that are far more flexible than what we could build with Workbench Moderation as is. So so imagine, for those who haven't used cTools a lot, there's a ton of flexibility there. And you know, all of the context that comes with cTools is now available to you in this Workbench Moderation 2x version. So it's really exciting, allowing you to control, you know, when content can move from one state to another, you know, what fields need to be filled out to say, yes, this has been approved by the legal department and, you know, the editorial, you know, staff, and then applying cTools controls over, okay, this can be published now, or, you know, or this person has access to publish this now, you know? So we're really excited about all of those changes, and it needs a little more polish, and that's what we're going to be working on in the next couple of weeks.
Okay. So that's just Workbench Moderation, right?
Right.
And do you have an estimated due date for that? Is it going to be a couple of weeks, or by the end of the month?
Not that.
Or...
let's go with a couple of weeks to a month.
Okay.
You know, it's working well now, but we're sticklers for details, and we want to make sure we just hammer out a couple more issues before we're willing to put the stamp on it as a 2.0 release.
Sure. So are there any other modules that you're working on a 2.0 release of right now?
No, so for right now, it's just access and moderation.
Okay, cool. All right, well, that's all of the notes that I had, or all the questions I had written down. I did get a couple of questions in from Twitter.
Oh, okay.
So I want to get to those in just a minute, but I also wanted to say, and throw on my lower third again, anybody who's listening... send out a tweet with MUP043, episode 43. Yep. Man, I'm getting close to 50. I didn't think about something.
That's exciting.
have to have a party. Actually, I just looked it up on the calendar, and it's going to be on 12/12/12. That's the release date for episode 50. So
that sounds exciting.
Yeah, you do something special for that. Anyways, if you've got any questions or anything like that that have come up throughout the show, send a tweet, hashtag MUP043, and we'll get to those in just a second. But first, I'm going to ask the one from Steve Burge of ostraining.com. He said, I'm interested in how much Workbench takes over from core parts of Drupal. For example, would you use Workbench access instead of core user roles and permissions?
When in doubt, don't use access if you don't need it. Like, we don't really, we work in combination with core's user roles and permissions. And then, so for instance, you might set across the board that everyone can add and edit everything, and then you're controlling with more detail with Workbench access. These people can only create content that's tagged, you know, whatever, you know, that's in this classroom or whatever. So in many cases, it's really good to start with seeing what you can do with core's permissions and core's roles to solve your needs. Because when you start adding in something like a hierarchical access control system, it can get complicated. So it's really something, from my point of view, you want to sit down and say, who are the people that have access to this site and can add and edit content? Mm-hmm. And how much do we really need to control that access? In some cases, I've worked with folks who initially thought they needed to tie down everything top to bottom, and then they realized that that was a little bit too much control, right? Yeah. So then people were always coming to them saying, oh, I can't edit this thing.
Right.
So if you can rely on what core provides, then that's great. When you need something with finer controls, for instance, everyone can edit news, but only certain people can edit news in, you know, in the school or in these three classrooms, that's when you would want to start looking at using Workbench access.
Okay. And so if you're going to use Workbench access, do you then recommend that you do give everybody access to do everything and then only change the permissions in the Workbench access module?
Do I recommend that? Probably. Because, how's that for an answer? Probably. You know, I'm more of a sharing is caring type of person. This is a personal thing. So I would rather make sure people have access to content. And then if they end up changing something that I didn't want them to change, then tie it down, right? So I think trusting your users is a wonderful way to start your new website rather than saying, I don't trust you. Mm-hmm. Don't touch this. Don't touch that.
Right.
So in many cases, telling people you can only enter this kind of content and, you know, don't go around changing, you know, the geology department's, you know, section of the site when you're in the biology group, you know, just, you know, come on, be respectful. Right. But in some cases, that's not the case. Or you have so many users that there's no way to get that message across mm-hmm. in a reasonable way. In which case, yeah, you need to tie things down. And that's really where Workbench access will shine. You know, it's you have a lot of editorial groups that are managing a large site.
Okay. So like what you kind of just said, the geology department, if this is like a university where there's then the college chairs and then the biology department, and then they've got like graduate assistants or something under there, and they've got graduate assistants across the entire university, you probably want to use this because, you know, college kids are shady in general and they're going to change
it.
Something.
Oh, I'm sorry, all you college students out there. I apologize.
I don't apologize.
No. Oh, okay.
Just kidding. Okay, so you would recommend trying not to use Workbench access unless you find out you need to in general, but, you know, it's kind of a use case thing.
Yeah, I think it's worth writing down what you think you need is what I'm going to say. It's really worthwhile to say, what is the governance plan for this website? And if you're talking about 10 people managing a website, you may not need to have that many controls.
Right.
If you're talking about 100 or 200 people, that's a situation mm-hmm. that you probably want to contain. That's how I would look at it. You know, if it's a smaller group of people where you feel that you can trust them, I would leave it open. There, you know, and then when you think no, we really need to tie things down, just write it down first. Don't just go turning Workbench Access on and thinking you're like, just check these boxes yeah. and be done. Really try to identify who can edit and access which content and draw it out. You know, it's so worthwhile to sit down and figure out who are your groups of people and what is the content, you know, what content can they change on the site? So if you just have that written down first, you'll ease the process of actually implementing that configuration and Workbench Access.
Cool. Okay, let me check real quick to see if we had any more questions.
Okay.
Looks like Hack Monkey said he was tuned into the show.
Thanks, Hack Monkey.
Yeah. And then Micah Godbolt, I hope I pronounced that right. So he says, this is how interviews are meant to be done. Good. I like that.
Wow.
And he's looking forward to using Workbench. So,
oh, cool.
All right.
Awesome. Yeah. So again, if you haven't used Workbench or you're wondering, why would I use this? You know, the presentation we did at DrupalCon Chicago is still very solid and helps answer some of the questions that might help you to say, you know, is this something I want to use? Should I experiment with it? And otherwise just download it and go for it. And, you know, I'm in IRC, so, we'll get to that in a minute, but yeah. You know, you can always ping us out there. We're here available to answer questions.
Cool. And we just got one more, I guess, congratulations from Rod Martin says, nice job. This is great. So,
yeah. Cool.
Okay. I guess we're going to move on to the wrap up then. And then I'll let you go about your day and do whatever you want to.
Woo! Vacation day. No, going right back to work.
I always ask a couple questions at the end of the show just because it's kind of fun to hear people say. And the first one is, what is something that you're excited about that you're not working on but you think looks really cool?
Something I'm not working on that I think looks really cool. I'm working on that. Things I'm not working on. I have to say, I am really interested to see where Spark goes. Mm-hmm. I think what they're doing with the inline editing is really exciting, and I'll be curious to see how that stabilizes and how we're going to interact with that as well. I'm always excited about what I'm hearing about happening with D8 too, just in general. Mm-hmm. I know there's a lot of significant change going on there, and that's what makes Drupal great. You know, I mean, we look to improve what we've already done and to strive for the better option and the better solution. So, you know, I'm really excited to see how D8 comes out.
Cool. And I'm actually going to break my own rules for a second because everybody says Spark and Drupal 8 right now. That's just kind of how it goes.
I see.
So I do actually want to hear it. The one you said, I'm working on that. What was that you were thinking of?
Well, no, I'm only thinking of Workbench moderation because I'm so excited. Like, I so want to get it out there. You have no idea. I mean, it's not that you can't use it now. The dev version's there, but I really want to, like, stamp the 2.0 on it. And geeking out
that's
there.
That's good. Sounds good. Okay, and then finally, where can people find out more about you and the things that you're working on?
Well, you know, the best place to go is palantir.net. There are already some case studies of projects that I've been working on that are in our blog, so it's a great place to go. You can find me on drupal.org. My IRC is also the same as my username on drupal.org, and that's Robeano, Robeano. Ping me in IRC if you have questions. I'm around.
Excellent. Robin, this was great. I loved having you on. It was a lot of fun.
Oh, cool. Let's do it again. We'll find something else to talk about.
All right. Sounds good. Cool. That's going to wrap up this show. So Till next time, talk to you later.
Okay, thanks.
If you liked this episode, check out modulesunraveled.com/podcast to get more information about it. And while you're there, you can listen to other episodes or subscribe to the podcast in iTunes or your favorite podcast software. Also, check out the Drupal videos on the site. There are a number of series available, each teaching various subjects in Drupal 7, like setting up a newsletter, configuring organic groups, or how to make the images on your site responsive to complement your responsive design. Thanks for listening. Feel free to get in touch and keep those suggestions coming about who you want to hear from on the podcast. That's it for this episode of the Modules Unraveled podcast, and I'll talk to you next week. We'll be right back.